Boy, not bad.
I'm not sure Leo's claiming any responsibility here.
He's not interested.
What we did is go through and pick certain, you know, there's like the elementary sites, all these different things. We picked a group of them and ran it and it didn't run right. So we picked another group of them, ran it, and we're trying to get under 38 million. That's the problem. And this does come up to 38 million if I.
Yes.
And 44 million the second year. It's total 81.9 altogether. And what I think we should probably do is run through, I think most committees deal with these different types of changes. Maybe Dave can run through what's in each year.
Just change the second page of the handout that has the dollars on top, sort of outlines the major items that are included in the package. With two exceptions, all of these items have appeared before the committee in other drafts and have been discussed in some manner, at least in the hearings we've had previously. The two new items, or one that's different that has been discussed, is the way we approach equalization. And the other item that was added was the school board reports on improvement of instruction services in fiscal year 81. Recall during some of the testimony there were some questions, again, about the question of accountability, and one of the proposals that was discussed was having the districts identify how they're going to improve their educational services each year so that there's a plan to follow. And this bill, sections 1 and 2, would provide for the school boards to make a report to the commissioner each year on their plans for improvement of the instructional program so that there is a planning process evolving in the districts and the commissioner has it on file. That's a new section we've added based on testimony. In terms of the equalization program, the approach we ended up taking as a committee was to take the current concept of the in-lieu provisions that we currently have for just the REAAs and expand that concept statewide so that all districts in the state would participate in a program which is based on the amount of local taxes that are raised in the prior year statewide for schools. And we would expand that participation in the prior year average per student to all the districts in the state. So that's the basic rationale for the equalization program. That would affect only the urban districts, the city and borough districts, as it did the last several drafts that came up from the committee. It would discontinue the in-lieu program as a separate program. It would combine the in-lieu into the supplemental equalization program. So the REAAs would continue to receive the same kind of support that you receive now. It would be one total statewide package so that all districts could participate. Those are the two major changes in the drafts from the drafts you've seen previously this year.
Okay, and then you see what we've got in FY81 is a separate elementary site, the secondary formula change, increase the unit value.
A good point, Mr. Chairman. The increased unit value proposal is 7.3% in fiscal 81 and an additional 8.1% in fiscal 82.
Biennial area
differential. This provides for a biennial review for on area differential program in place of regulation.
Centralized correspondence study.
I'm sorry, that was the third one. I apologize. That was a new item also. Correspondence study is on page 2 of the bill, section 4. There's been concerned evidence in the committee about the growth of the state centralized correspondence program and how it affects local districts. So the committee has incorporated language in an attempt to allow the legislature some options in the growth of the centralized correspondence study each year, give you a chance to look at it and see how you want it to expand it, whether you want to hold it constant. What you've been doing the last couple of years was
it doesn't necessarily mandate that it be reduced or
that's correct.
It just gives the legislature the option.
Which you don't have under current statute.
Minimum expenditure for instruction.
This is the 55% minimum that had been in the previous drafts. Would require, again, the school operating fund, 55% of those expenditures go for the instructional components of the budget.
School board report on improvement instructional services.
This again relates to the testimony we discussed on accountability and having the districts provide a plan of improvements in instructional programs.
You know, we've adopted somewhat of a new approach on the deduction of state aid fund balance increases.
Yeah, the change in state aid for fund balances, again, is on page 6, section 17. What we're provided for is that the fund balance offset would only go into effect if the district surplus has exceeded 8% of their prior year expenditures. In effect, we're allowing an 8% working capital or 8% reserve for the offset.
Now, we struggled with this before. We wanted, a couple of us on the committee anyway, wanted to reduce those fund balances, and then everybody says they need them. I think what we've got is a compromise that most, at least most of the district people we talked to agree to. That, I don't know how many.
I think you find in the school district community that an 8% reserve would be considered equitable on a statewide basis.
They've complained that if we dip into that, that they, you know, it's sort of like a working capital fund for them. So this way, we get to keep some accountability on those things, but we'll also allow for some flexibility. And revised secondary school definition.
This again was a technical change recommended by the department, and it's been incorporated in all the drafts that you've seen previously. There's no change.
Okay, in 82 then, run through the.
All right, in 82 we have the balance of the secondary formula, and again we split the formula so that we could meet the target dollars that were discussed earlier. The elementary formula again was one of the ones that was presented in the hearings. It was incorporated in the Ferguson proposal. The elimination of the 3% local effort ties in with the supplemental equalization aid program, so that we have 100% foundation support for all districts, and in addition, a supplemental program for equalization. Increased unit value is 8.1%. And again, as we discussed earlier, we said we eliminate the separate in lieu program for REAs and incorporate it into the equalization program.
First
two columns indicate what Craig would receive under the current law.
Okay.
Current law, and the estimates of their receipts. Okay, then these next two columns would be the impact of the separate elementary sites package that's built into this bill, and there'd be no effect on Craig. All right, the next group would be the changes in the secondary formula, and Craig would pick up an additional unit, instructional unit, because of that change, which would be worth $34,452 under the current law. Then they'd also get the increase of 7.3% on the instructional unit, which results in $47,569. Adding those costs, they would have a total revised FY81 entitlement of $699,195,000, which would be an increase of $82,000 over the current law.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Equalization, supplemental equalization aid. Do you want to run by again?
Yes.
What's to deter the school districts from completely eliminating their local taxes?
Yes. We put a floor in, Mr. Chairman, and I would point out while we're on that section, top of section 3, there is an editing error where it says July 30, 1979. It should say June 30. Make sure I pick that up.
Where is that?
What page? Right at the top of page 3, the very first line. The top of page 3 says July 30, 1979. It should be June 30, 1979.
Where are you?
Top of page 3. You know, right. We found 4 editing errors, and that's the, and they're all 4 in this one section.
So it should be June 30.
June 30, not July 30. And in line 3, the very first word that says and should be aid. Aid, not and. The way it works, Mr. Chairman, is that, as the same way in lieu currently works, is that you calculate the local tax contributions of all the districts in the state and in the prior year, and you divide that by the ADM in those districts in the prior year, you come up with an average local tax support per ADM. That's the basic calculation. That would become the basic equalization aid support by the state. then go to each district and subtract from that figure the local support in that particular district. And you give them the difference between the statewide average and the local average, the local figure. In the case of the REAs, the local figure is zero, so they get full support as they currently do under in lieu. We put in the language to protect the program from having everybody just drop their tax rates to zero. We said that the determining factor will be the local tax contribution in the prior fiscal year or in the fiscal year ending June 30, 1979, which means that they would have as a deduction from the statewide average whatever their local tax contribution was per ADM for fiscal 79. So that would be the minimum tax contribution they have to continue to make in order to receive state equalization. So you couldn't drop the bottom out of the car. We have a 470.
I want to run through an example.
Does that explain the question?
That explains the point. I was also, another follow-up question.
Face the committee members right over here.
Put it behind Scott.
Yeah. Okay, right.
That's the one that was
putting the right up there.
Now, this has some support for Kuwait students in Saudi Arabia and Nigeria.
This bill is all based on questions.
How about ladies and gentlemen? We need a... Hey, John. I think we need an eraser.
I think we have an additional question.
Could you give my...
I don't see any provision here for, say, any REAAs that could possibly decide through the... local government avenues. In other words, if they wanted to create their own borough, first class municipalities, there's no current language that there is supposed to be in the record.
Yes, it would, because as we incorporated this fiscal 82 amendment, we changed the definition of school district under in the foundation bill to include REAAs. So they would be considered a school district, so that everything in the bill would apply to REAAs as well as regular districts. I think that would resolve the question you're asking.
What I'd like you to do is,
I think John would get an eraser.
I'd like you to go through the formula as it currently applies to REAAs and then show how it's going to be applied, and then maybe run through an example if we can do it simple enough to show that there isn't an incentive. We'll stand at ease for now. Go ahead, Dave.
Why don't you show why Fairbanks doesn't get any money under the
equalization?
As an example. Some
are you were out during the discussion of this item. That's
Fairbanks was a 16% increase.
Not under equalization.
Well, under total.
Under less of a total. Look at everything. We get less of a chunk of the pie than we do now.
That's because the university got so much.
Because the improvement education doesn't do any good in Fairbanks.
How big an increase is Juno get?
You aren't even on the chart here. It's damn small.
He's damn big. He's off the side.
These figures are correct.
Case that there is a need for improved education in Fairbanks.
I agree. I move that we add another.
It won't help if they throw money after it. I'll guarantee you that.
That's always the answer.
You can't teach them, buy them.
Perfect. separate element, separate. The way the formula would work, Harry, because we have it written, so you would first determine, as they do now, for in lieu, the statewide average per ADM. From local tax effort, local tax contributions. And this is hypothetical, this figure is not the current one, but approximately $56 million raised locally around the state, basically for cities and boroughs, for local tax effort for schools, and approximately 68,000 ADM in those same districts, and you get an average of 824 in this particular case. Per ADM is a statewide average local contribution for schools.
Okay, now currently, before this change, all the REAAs, since they're,
On the current legislation, that 824 would then be provided to the REAA schools as an in lieu tax program. That's the current, that's currently in statute. What we've provided for in this bill is the elimination of that language for in lieu and incorporated a separate category, separate statute, which includes REAAs and city and boroughs, in fact, includes all districts, and uses the same basic calculation. Establish the local tax contribution per ADM, in this case $824 per ADM, and then go back to each individual district and determine its equalization aid using the next set of the formula, which is to take the local district's average per ADM based on its own contributions. In this case, the hypothetical $750,000 raised locally for schools from local taxes, and they have 1,000 ADM, $750 per ADM raised locally. But then take the difference between the local effort and the statewide effort and provide $74 per ADM to that district as equalization aid. In the case of the districts where this is zero, they would get the whole 824, and then all the other districts would get somewhere in between based on their local effort the prior year. This would all be based on prior year.
You know, a local entity that was at 750 reduced their effort to 650. That is, they went down $100,000. Go through what?
Okay. The question then would be: we have to come back and redo this, and we don't know what the effect here is yet. But if the local effort in the following year came to 650 per ADM, we would have to recalculate the 824. If they dropped to 650. Depending on the size of the district, if it's Anchorage, for example, which raises about half of this amount up here, this 824 would also drop. And they would get the difference between 650 and the new figure. And in no case could they recover the total difference. They would recover less than that total difference because the total average would not go down at the same rate as an individual district's average.
That would change to about 822.
In this situation?
Yeah.
They would not be able to recover their total reduction. They would recover some portion of it, but not totally. But in addition to that, we have a floor. We said that they can't go any lower than what they had raised per student in FY79. In the case of this hypothetical district, let's say that this would have been FY80 here. FY80. But in FY79, let's assume that they raised 700. For purposes of equalization, they would have to use the 700 as their subtraction figure, not the 650. They would only get the difference between 700 and 824, or 822, whatever the new statewide average is.
What happens then? I notice you have some sort of a formula for phasing out the ADM drop, say, in a particular school district.
If the ADM dropped, and they remained constant on their tax contribution, at some point, they would exceed the statewide average of 824 and they would no longer participate in the equalization program. It would only be for those districts who have 823 or less per ADM who would actually participate in the equalization program. Any district that raised more from local taxes than 824 would get nothing from the equalization fund. This is to only bring the districts up to the average statewide level, not to go beyond.
Questions on that?
And I think the floor question is what Steve was talking about earlier. So 700, I think, protects this from having all the districts suddenly drop all their taxes. in 1 year.
Nate, Mr. Chairman, where, in your hypothetical figures up there, what was that, the 700?
Okay. In this case, Mr. Chairman, I was using an estimated fiscal year 80 set of 750. In fiscal year 79, they actually had $700 per ADM. That would be their floor. They could not go below that for purposes of equalization. So if they went to fiscal year 81 and dropped their local tax contribution all the way down to 650, for purposes of the equalization calculation, we would use a 700 figure, not the 650, for determining how much they should have in equalization.
So that, in the first place, the first $50 that they dropped
would be theirs.
Would be, they would receive an increase in equalization, but not commensurate. It would be less than the 50.
That's correct.
And then the next 50 that they dropped down from 700 to 650, they would receive no increase
That's
in equalization.
Correct. That's correct.
So it is not an incentive to decrease local effort.
But it could be an assistance.
Yes.
It is additional money
it
if
is.
You maintain your current
right.
effort.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman. Dave, do you want to explain the 874 funds and how they relate to this
formula? In the current, in the statute says we have them in this bill, the offset of PL 874 funds would continue in the foundation program. It would not be affected so that the that says it all. They would not be affected. We're not affecting the PL 874 statutes at all under this provision. The offset would continue.
You talk about offset, you're talking about
foundation fund. Bridger Foundation.
Rationale behind including this section as to giving Commissioner the power to go ahead and revise the area differential. So
there were two rationales, Mr. Chairman. The basic one being that under the current situation, with the differential being established through the statutes, it was felt that by providing a different process, which required a biennial study to determine what the changes and the factors were, we might get a more consistent approach to the area-wide differential question and isolate it from external pressures that might not have anything to do with the actual changes that are required. The second part of the language requires that a study be done by the University of Alaska, which is not a creature or under the administrative control of the commissioner. In effect, it would only be using the data provided by an external source to make the changes themselves, and it would relieve some political pressure from the question of area wide differential.
Well, in a nutshell, you give the commissioner full responsibility depending on what the area differential would be for each different school.
Yes, that does. We
by regulation.
By regulation, that's correct. The assumption, I think, being implicit in the statute that he's required to do the biennial study at the University of Alaska as the determining factor in his decision.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not so sure if I feel comfortable with that language. I think the way it's set up in the statute pretty much outlines what the area differential would be for each school district. I notice we've taken amendment here for Sand Plain because they're on the chain. I understand that. I don't know, I just feel uncomfortable with the idea of having the commission make the final determination on something that's by the interest of the client.
I Do you have an idea how you might wanna work it?
Well, I could move, delete the language.
But what we need the area differential though.
Well, it's, all you're doing here is adding a new section. The area differential is already in the statute.
So you'd keep it how it is?
The legislature determined it. Mr. Chairman, I would move to section 13.
How about section, oh yeah, A, B, C? How about, we have a motion before us, and under discussion, Leo, how about keeping the study in there and having him submit to the legislature his recommendations? In other words, you would have an official, supposedly unbiased study that recommended certain things, and it wouldn't, you know, the legislature have something to go on. We could reject it if we didn't agree with it, we'd have something to go on. How about that?
That'd be fine with me.
Make sure it's passed.
Well, I don't wanna do that.
If I understand, I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, you want to continue the language that requires that a biennial study be made? You want the commissioner to then propose changes in the table to the legislature?
Yeah.
Or to advise the legislature to propose changes?
No, I want the legislature, this is, I'm trying to compromise to Leo's position, which is they wanna just wipe it out. I think we could maybe capture some of the intent of this, which is to have an unbiased study. The legislature would still retain the full authority in making those decisions, but at least they would have something to go on a yearly basis. And I'm just changing the authority from the commissioner to the legislature, but the commissioner would take into consideration this study, and then based upon that, he would make recommendations to the legislature on a yearly basis as to changes in the statute.
Is this your commissioner doing the study or the university?
University doing the study, and the commissioner takes the study and, looking at the study and also whatever else he might take into account, but I suspect be primarily the study, make recommendation to the legislature, which is merely a recommendation, but we would have that to go on, and I would assume in most cases, unless there's something wrong with it, we might accept it, but if we didn't want to, if we wanted to readjust it, or if we thought that the analysis was incorrect, or we had better information, we could accept it or reject it or whatever. But it would
be in section 13?
It would not take effect until the legislature passed it.
Right.
So it would not take effect until the legislature passed it. I'm proposing that as an amendment to Leo's motion if he accepts it. That's only a...
Do you understand, Dave, also the $224,000, that's the amount of money that would be appropriated if this bill passes to go ahead and pay for the study?
Yes.
How much?
$224,000. That's correct. That's the assumption that would be needed to set up the study, complete the study, and put in motion all the mechanisms so that the study can be done on a routine basis.
Is that included in this?
Yes, it is.
As far as the contract?
Yes.
That's the part of the business that we had on the deal.
That's right.
I'm going to object to both the motion and the amendment. I'd rather base it on this study. If we wanted to have the legislature overturn it by resolution, that would be all right. That it goes in unless the legislature overturns it. But I think the differential ought to be based on the results of the study.
I think, Brian, we haven't passed the bill that would allow the legislature to do that. So it's an all the regulation. Right now, I understand we don't have any problems.
We could probably put it in statute that way, I suspect. Is that, let me know?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Could we go correct on that. We can, we the legislature can still annul the regulations, except we have to do it by bill form rather than resolution.
Well, what I was, I realized that what I was referring to was the existing bill that's in the bill right now that would give us the power to do it by resolution versus a bill.
Well, the motion before us is Leo's motion with my amendment, and Brian just indicated that he's opposed to that. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is gonna be in section 13, and the wording that you've explained will take the place of A, B, and C above in section 13, is that right?
Yeah, I think B would.
Rewording B, I think, would need A and C.
Yeah.
Because we have current statutes that cover those.
Would need that.
So A and C would go out?
Yes.
Remove it to something like this. The commission shall propose to the legislature revisions in the table of differential instruction allotments biannually. Shall be based on a biannual study made with the University of Alaska, that shall establish appropriate differential elements, weighting factors for instruction units, shall include the process for periodic revision of the differential instruction allotments.
Something like that.
Or if I vote from the back of the room?
Certainly, certainly. Are there other further questions?
I guess it's just a question. I think the downside of it is that it might get trapped in the legislature and increases that would be needed because of changes in cost of living in certain areas would not get through, you know, as expeditiously as the commission did. On the other hand, it retains the legislative control, which is something I always support, so I don't have any problem with that.
Could you put a date in there if you think it's gonna be bog bound? Could you put a date? But wouldn't that must be done? Would that be practical?
Well, that's what Brian was saying, that if the legislature failed to take action by a certain date, then it would just automatically go through. I don't.
Well, would you just disagree with that?
I don't, what do you mean?
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, the point is, if there's no date, if no action was taken, it seemed like you would never know where you stood unless there was a date established whereby the legislature must take action by a certain date.
Like an executive order.
Yeah, you know, we do that sometimes.
Specify that in there.
If legislature takes action, they can take action. If they don't, it goes ahead anyway.
It's like school districts now submit a budget to their assembly. If the assembly doesn't act in 30 days, your budget's approved. So you can bet your boots that they act. They either do it, becomes law, or yours. I would hate to see a hangout. In other words, I'd want the action to occur in a timely manner. Would Dave have a thought on that? Help on that?
Well, obviously it would have to be done during session. The commissioner would have to make his recommendations like in January of every second year approximately. If you want the legislature to act on it, which you obviously do, you'd have to have a date in there for which he had to provide you with the information to allow you to have time to make the decisions. But case in point, I think, is Sandpoint. Sandpoint was included in Senate Bill 199 last year. It didn't get approved last year. I think that's the kind of question that the sponsors of this kind of language are trying to get around.
I think it's a trade-off between, you know, legislative control and the timeliness of the act. Simple, familiar problem. I don't know. Do you have a recommendation, Leo, on that?
Well, I just don't see there would be a problem myself, because I don't really see the legislature being hung up on the area differential. This, you know, being, are you just talking about the date in which the commissioner gives his report to the legislature as far as his recommendations are? What the figures would be, or am I missing something?
No, I think I have no objection. But I thought if the date would make it clear, I just don't like the uncertainty that occurred this year, and I guess that's why I'm a little uptight on obligations not being met. And I think obligations weren't met this year, and that disturbs me, because I think it's affected the state. There's more people in the state been affected by this than anything, the delay in the decision this year. So if the delay was indicated here, if it's our intention to get action, then it would be nice to have a date that they would have to comply with. But I have no objection to your, Leo, your amendment. But I'm, rather than delay, I'm willing to proceed without the date. I don't, I think we've got to move it.
Well, I think that, you know, the original language without the amendment actually would increase the likelihood of area differentials. For people who favor area differentials, it kind of institutionalizes it, and you can bypass the legislative process, and they happen almost automatically. If you're worried that your area could lose on that, then you wouldn't want to have the legislature have the power to, you know, step in there. But the other concern of mine is that I just am reluctant to delegate any authority. I'm always in favor of keeping it thus.
Chair, I agree with what you just said, but I'm wondering why in the original language there wasn't the date by which the commissioner should set the differential. Say, he should set it prior to legislative session, so legislators would know what it is during the session. The way it appears, he could set it in July after we adjourn. Mm-hmm. Although I guess it wouldn't become effective until next year in that case, would it? Does that make a difference, Joe?
Yes, it could.
You would have the money. You may not have
money to do it, though.
Yeah, you'd have to get it.
But I'm wondering why it wasn't required that you do that at the beginning of the session.
I think the assumption, Mr. Chairman, as we developed this language, was the assumption was it would be done at time for the following fiscal year's budget to be prepared by the legislature.
Yeah,
so
I guess
the assumption implicit there.
That, I guess that would make sense.
But I think it does make sense at the same time, Mr. Chairman, to put the a date in
there. To put it in.
Purpose, that express purpose.
Right.
Not for the legislature, no, I said, but for the commission.
I'd like to get the bill out.
Leo, let me try to track this now. What is your concern with the original language?
Well, my concern is that the same as yours was that the legislature should retain some authority to go ahead and, rather than giving it all to the commission.
How about Joe's compromise? That's not a bad one because
as far as setting a definite date, it would depend on the date. I don't.
Well, the one thing is that you know, we are just absolutely guilty of not being able to do things quickly. I mean, not only does it take us to end the whole session, I'm doing two or three. And in a case where one area was, you know, getting extremely out of hand in their differential, and then they didn't get the increase, it would really be unfair to that area if it was impacted. You know, let's say there was a development in the western part of Alaska. Alaska that would really increase the cost of those individuals or something. Maybe.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any objection to a date. In fact, Mr. Montgomery wants to propose a date.
I'd ask Dave's working both sides of the fence these days. I'd ask him to come up with a date and then I'll argue with him if I don't like it.
It's the easiest thing to do is just put a date in here and then language by regulation.
No, I think what we mean by date is that the commissioner does it. If the legislature doesn't take action by a certain date, it becomes effective. Other than that.
Right. What I was going to suggest is on line 21, the commissioner shall revise the table of differential in discretionary unit allotment values biannually by regulation by January 15th of each year. The legislature then has the option of either coming in and individually changing those or doing whatever else they want to. They can look at it. If they're not happy, they can take action here and say,
well,
it doesn't require approval or disapproval. You can just be quiet when it happens or. Why require approval if no one's upset? You've got it up front at the beginning of the session, and you can make a determination individually whether you want to introduce legislation to change it.
Yeah, when does it become effective?
Yes, but in the appropriate fiscal year.
Yeah. Well, you want to say that,
huh? Well, I think it's understood.
Didn't you want to say that you shall propose the regulations in the year prior to the fiscal year that's going to be effective?
Close to January 15th, we'd be funding that year.
Well, the thing is that do you want to say in the statutes that the legislature, you know, has the authority to overrule them? Obviously, they do.
Do anyway. Why do you need to say?
Well, because you got the whole question of changing regulations by statute.
Well, that's how you would change it. Say if the commissioner came in with a area differential for teams of whatever it might be, and I wasn't happy with that, I'd have the option of introducing legislation to change it and increase it. And I would know that when the legislature convened, I would know what he was.
But is there any legal question about that, though? I mean, that's what.
I don't know, Mr. Chairman.
I think, you know, we might want to ask legal about that in light of the Supreme Court action. We might want to put in the statute that regulation becomes effective unless the legislature passes a statute change.
I think it's understood that we change regulation to statute. I mean, no question about that.
No question.
There's no legal question in that. That's the way, that's what the Supreme Court said we can do.
Neil?
Yes.
You understand the motion now?
I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, by regulation, by January 15th for the following fiscal year.
Yeah, that'd be right.
By January 15th for the following fiscal year.
For the following.
For the following.
That'd be following two fiscal years.
Years, following fiscal years, it's by any extent.
Right. Everybody know what the motion is now?
How was that again, Mr. Chairman? For the following.
The change would be on line 21, Mr. Chairman, at the end of the first sentence, after the word regulation, by regulation, by January 15th for the following fiscal years.
Okay, anybody opposed to the motion?
Do we also need to say that on line 16? Do we also need to say that on line 16?
I don't think you need to, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it adds to the statute. I think the decision process is section B.
Without objection, the motion carries.
Mr. Freeman?
Sorry.
Oh, Bill?
Wait a minute. I'm not sure where to go in the bill, but I assume the draftsman put it in. It'd be language to the effect that at least 95% of the funds received by a school district are REAA under the allotments for special vocational or bilingual education must be expended for those purposes.
The impact of that, Mr. Chairman, if I may, is that I think we had testimony earlier that the districts earn foundation units for things like special ed based on the services they're providing. And they do not have to expend all the dollars they receive for special ed on special ed as long as they provide the services they were claiming. So there could be a surplus in any one categorical fund which the district would then use for other purposes in the district. I think the motion would preclude that from happening with returning funds.
I introduced a bill last year dealing with funding for special ed, essentially provide a year-round funding for it. And I got a number of calls from people who said that it was a good idea, but the problem was that the school districts weren't spending the money they were getting now on special ed. And that a number of school districts around the state let the money lapse at the end of the year and it lapses into their general fund, which they can then use for other purposes.
Did we have testimony on this?
Well, we made a brief discussion indicating that, you know, there's no prohibition from that happening.
Yeah. As long as they provided the services that they used to claim the instructional unit, they could keep the money they received from the state.
And what this would do, we'd essentially say, well, they've got a 5% margin. If they can lapse 5% of that into the general fund. Anything beyond that they don't spend on special ed or vocational ed or whatever, would have to be held over in a special account for those purposes.
It seems awfully reasonable. I mean, I'm sure that there might be some technical problems here, but why wouldn't they want to do that? I mean, that's what the money would be appropriated for, right?
You know, that's the reason I'm offering the amendment. I think if we're going to be providing money to provide certain types of services that ought to be used for that.
Yeah. You say if they don't use it in any one year, they put it aside as a special fund for that purpose.
I assume the effect of this amendment would be that if they only use 90%, they've got 10% left, that they could lapse 5% of their general fund, and that they'd have to keep 5% in a special account for
those particular purposes.
Mr. Chairman,
Neil,
just a question. How was your figure 95% derived at?
Just off the top of my head, suggested 90, so.
Do you have any specific examples?
I've gotten calls from several people in Juneau and Fairbanks when I introduced my bill who indicated that both those districts lapse special ed money and don't use it for special ed and hold it over and use it for something else.
So, Mr. Chairman, Wouldn't the commissioner have some control over that, Dave?
No, I think, Mr. Thompson is here, Mr. Chairman, he can speak to that, but once the district receives the money and has provided the service that they claim, the money belongs to the district for its own use.
But it's still accountable.
The audit would be on the services rendered. If the services are rendered that were claimed, then the district has the money.
All right, now, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do, is, on this particular motion, we haven't really had discussion on it. I don't wanna open this whole thing back up to 16,000 people testifying. But I would, if anybody in the audience wants to just give what the position of their group is or their particular position on it briefly, I'd allow that. And I would ask the department if they have a position on it.
Also, Mr. Chairman, the department does not have a position on that.
They don't have a position, they have.
But I would like to make a couple of comments.
Okay.
In those three categories identified, fiscal year 79 audited figures show that local districts spend more in special ed and vocational education than what they generate from public school foundation programs. Bilingual program is a little different, and I wouldn't draw any conclusions because it was the first year that it was enacted into law. And many of the city and borough districts and part of the REAAs have had no bilingual program in the past. And therefore, there was a gap between what was generated in foundation revenue and what was expended for that particular component. I would anticipate that gap will close if the schedule that the statute of distribution is developed.
But so it shouldn't cause a problem in any area then, except eventually in any way. Because in the two, they spend more than they get now, and in bilingual, you think the gap is going to close, and it theoretically shouldn't be a problem.
It all depends upon. The only place I can envision a problem.
Seem right that they should get funds for something that they don't need? I mean, if we're putting out money for special ed and they don't have a need for it, then maybe they shouldn't get it.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that, I think it was 2 years ago, and again, Bill can help me, there was a bill passed which provides a study that was being made, I think, by Northwest Arctic and several other districts on the use of block grant funds rather than categorical aid funds. Next year that the report's to be made back by the commissioner, maybe this amendment should wait more likely for that kind of report to find out what happens in the districts where they ignore the crossing of special categorical fund lines and what the impacts are on the district programs.
Why would it need to wait though? I mean,
because we don't know yet what's happened. Well, we may know a couple of isolated instances, but I think what those districts are trying to define for us is, do we really need to have these very specific lines of categorical aid? Or is the district better able to operate its programs that it needs to operate with a larger lump sum of money?
Well, we're given a large lump sum of money here, and you know, I think in the case, and I voted for all those programs, including bilingual, you know, in the increases. And I don't mind spending the money on that, but I don't think that I should have said I'm voting for $5 million bilingual if it went to something else. And I don't think we should pump in money for special ed if it went to something else. I think they should use it for what it's appropriate.
Well, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. I think I don't think that's a problem for the most part.
I don't either. I think it's, they don't have enough.
I think what we're inferring here is that they're going that by adopting this meeting. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Well, I don't think that, you know, I don't think there's any inference. It just guarantees it. There might be some people that aren't using it for what, you know, there's a lot of districts in this state, and I suspect that most of them need more special ed money. What was the other one? Special ed what?
I
suspect most of them need more, you know, eventually. Well, maybe not bilingual right now, but eventually. And I think, in any case, I think it's entirely appropriate that we're not even asking them to spend 100% of it. We're saying they spend 95% of it. I can't see why anybody could be opposed to Brian.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd move an amendment to make that 92%, since we are allowing people to keep fund balances of 8%. It seems consistent to allow 8% on this one as well.
We're not
saying the money lapses or they can't confused, or we're just saying that if only 5% can go to a general fund balance, anything else would have to go into a special ed balance.
They could keep it as a special ed balance for whenever they need it.
Okay.
You can try it.
I'll try it.
Let's vote on this question. Anybody else want to say anything? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. School Boards Association would be opposed to this point of view, not because there's probably an inequity in the vast majority of the school districts, especially in the area, as Bill Thompson has indicated, in the area of special ed and vocational education. Local school districts, especially from the lower, middle to the larger school districts, spend considerably more local money in those programs than they receive. Anchorage, about a year ago, figured out that they paid about 50% of the special ed budget from local revenues. So this concern that Mr. McKinnon has brought up would not have any impact in those two categories from any district, maybe 500 students and on up. Unfortunately, when you start dropping down into the very small school district, take a Pelican with 38 kids, 6 instructional units, one of those happens to be a vocational unit, that generates a block of money. It may not be sound fiscal management for them to spend all of that in that particular category. And I would have to ask the question, is that going to be required a direct expenditure in that particular area, special ed, or is part of that instructional unit gain going to be allowed to be used for the non-academic areas such as the support of the building, the maintenance, and all this sort of thing? I really think that the point that you're addressing yourself to is directed at the very small school districts of the state, both REAAs and city school districts. And I think there's a lot more that has to be looked into that approach before you make a decision. I would heartily support your major concern, and that is if a program is generating more money than is needed, then we need adjustments. But I have a great deal of difficulty in the manner in which you're trying to do that. There have been some other alternative approaches that are being considered, one being in the small school districts to allow earning of a partial unit. You see, you're kind of playing Russian roulette with those numbers. A unit is very soon going to generate $35,000. The next step is $70,000 with no steps in between. And for a very small school district, that's their only option. So if they had an option to gain just part of that unit, that might be a solution to have the costs and the revenue generation come along at the same time. But until you further study this, I would hardly request that this committee not consider this until it's been thoroughly researched.
Yeah, I had a slight slip there for a moment, thought the foundation formula bore some resemblance to, or had some base in reality, but I forgot that it didn't. And so, I was operating the assumption that we were putting money into special ed, it was going to be spent on special ed. But, the formula is just, like I say, we start with the end number and work our way back. So since nothing in there bears any, I mean, has any rational basis anyway, I'll withdraw the amendment. So.
I thought it was a good amendment.
Well, I thought it was too, but I forgot that nothing in there, really means anything anyway. So in no sense putting any restrictions on it. But if all it's going to do is put small school districts in the bind, I'm not interested in doing that. I was under the assumption that there was some problem with larger school districts, you know, not spending all the special ed.
Okay.
Motion to withdraw.
Chairman, I don't want to seem anxious, but are you ready? Before I start this, I'm reading the anchor signer on the evening paper, and it says, Assembly seats 8 in Juneau, and the anchor's assembly may fly to Juneau Wednesday to help lobby traditional state aid local schools. And all further down, it says, the assembly chairman said if legislature approved school funding proposal today or tomorrow, the 11-member panel won't go to Juneau, Mr. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent of the committee to report out House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 199, Finance.
Is there objection to the motion? Motion carries. Here on the side of the committee.
We're going to be at 1:30 for right. Proceed. What page were we on?
We're supposed to, there's some, Mr. Chairman, it's page 218 in the short form, or down toward the bottom of page 17.
Okay, what page again?
218.
218. Okay, page 218.
Okay, the first component in the Sport Fish Division is investigations and research. Basically, the only changes are allowing a maximum of 15% on the FY18 budget from over the travel through miscellaneous line items, or travel over equipment line items, and a $60,000 reduction from a part-time increase. It did allow the new positions requested and a substantial portion of the part-time increase. Most of the positions requested were part-time. Now, there is an addition in the miscellaneous line item of $163,200, and this comes from what had been budgeted as the Sport Fish King Salmon Office, which last year in the budget, in the pre-conference committee version of the budget, was budgeted separately, and it shows up on page 226, 227. Subcommittee recommendations to roll this component into Sport Fish Investigations and Research, and to add
Smith, you want to conduct this, you want me to do it the way you want it.
In the case of management, the only significant change was a reduction of $54,000 in personal services from the total part-time increase, and all the other line items were held a maximum of 15%. It's a, governor's figure, you can see it's $1,058,000, the subcommittee, figure is $943,000.
I might also add that this funds two new life history studies in Cook Inlet and one in Colville.
Sport fish restoration is the governor's figure. Sport fish administration, there's a total of $17,000 over the various line items, expenditure reduced in the outward and otherwise, same as the governor's.
Can I ask, did you take a vacancy assessment against any of these offices or?
In the case of the department fish and game, it's generally much lower than it is in other, table. King salmon August, we discussed earlier, we'll see in the house call, there's no funding there, but the four and a half positions that were budgeted last year have been transferred into investigation and research. Brings up the Fred division. Basically, first component, Fred operations. Fred division had a little bit of departure here from the norm in that they budgeted some existing positions as new positions. And when the decision was made to be consistent with this component as the rest of the department, that is to hold them roughly this 15-17% increase, it meant that $82,000 worth of the $420,000 worth of personal services had to be reduced. So the subcommittee recommendation doesn't directly say which of these existing positions would be cut. It simply imposes a ceiling. Says the $82,000 out of that $420,000 that they're showing as new positions, which are in fact existing positions, would have to be reduced. There's also a reduction in travel of $108,000. The contractual line item allows a maximum 15% on FY80 only, and a general reduction of $54,000 in equipment. The difference between the two, you can see it there on the cut sheet. The governor's figure is about $7.9 million against the House subcommittee figure of $7.3 million. This is looking at a base figure last year, FY80, of $6.2 million.
Is there a performance audit done?
Yeah, it was not done. It was directed but not done.
The legislative auditor didn't follow legislative intent.
Which, on which, for who?
On what?
On Fred.
It was directed but not done?
It went out as an intent statement last year and apparently was not picked up. In any event, I called the commissioner in January or February to see if anything had been done, you know, and they said no, that they're response to the intent statement still stands. Find on the bottom of page 238. Fed administration, some very minor reductions here. There's a reduction in personal services of 18.2. And a reduction of 13.5 in travel. There were no new positions requested, so it didn't reduce any positions. Fred technology and development, again, holding the increase on personal services to a maximum of 15% meant reducing 21.4 in personal services. So that is the only difference between the subcommittee recommendation and the governor's figure.
brings us to the Division of Administration and Support. First element is the Commissioner's Office. Three new positions requested, and the subcommittee's recommendation is the governor's figure, so they all three will be funded.
What the $400,000 in grants is for this year?
Either Regional Aquaculture Association grant. I think there's $100,334.
Weren't those covered under?
Do you know the answer to this question, Bob?
Were they covered? No, apparently not, because they're still moving forward. Okay, the next element is public communication, what we used to call INE, and there was one position requested, and the position was disallowed. There were a total of $35,000 reduction of the rest of the line items. The most significant reduction is $20,000 was taken from the rental for 12 TV spots and a 1.5-hour film, which they budgeted $30,000 for. So it would leave a $10,000 balance in that account, and the rest of it is pretty minor. And this was an important item as far as the publication that the department puts out, and that school is funded at their request. And the subcommittee's recommended figure. Administrative services. The next component. And the only variation here is the deletion of position number 7, which was accounting technician for Juno, part-time. Otherwise, the governor's figure was used.
Position number 7 was maintenance man.
Fairly.
But the governor didn't have any funding for him anyway.
Yeah, 8 and 9, the governor had no funding. The maintenance man, the part-time was to mow the lawn in Fairbanks. About $6,600 was a lawn. It's a little bigger lawn than that.
The kid's going to be a member of APEA. Position 7 is the maintenance. And that's where he was.
That's for mowing the lawn, did you say?
Position 7 was.
Where's the lawn?
Fairbanks.
It's a big lawn.
It is a big, big, big lawn.
By a lot of goats.
We did cut the position.
Sure. We want to get my powers.
Leave that alone.
Okay, the next division is the game division. And first item is investigations and research. There's a general reduction made in personal services, travel, and contractual. You see them listed on page 248A. Up at the top under house analysis. The three new positions requested, and they would be funded in the house figure.
Get as many positions as Juno does.
Game management is the next element. It's the governor's figure. Hunter safety, governor's figure. Game admin and support, governor's figure. Special projects, governor's figure. And on the
page 259 and 258, we have the sheets describing the non-game fish and wildlife program discussed earlier. Not in the governor's budget, added by the subcommittee.
Where are the new positions on that? Was this one position?
No, there's three. There'll be two in Juneau and one in either Anchorage or Fairlands.
Those are just missing from this list?
Right, we just got them yesterday. We didn't have time to get them.
But that money, the $75,000, is adequate for those three positions?
It's supposed to be. That's why we were so late. We just, well, wait a minute. I don't have that other sheet. I left it in my office. Do you have a copy I gave you?
It's on my desk.
It may not be, Brian. We got the figures yesterday. We just put these out as approximate, and then we got the final breakup yesterday. I hope so, too.
Okay, the vessels component will be the next item, and it's the governor's figures. Boards of fish and game, there is a $38,400 reduction in travel. That's the only difference between the governor's figure and subcommittee figure. The FY80 authorized figure for travel was $62,000. The subcommittee figure would be $100,000. Subsistence section. Subcommittee figure is the same as the governor's figure.
What page are you on, Bob?
$265.
It is the same?
Right.
The position counts.
Positions appear different because budget management has corrected the file. It's my understanding that the positions are right and are shown under the house analysis, but in any event, the governor's figure is used and there were no positions deleted.
So we approved the same positions that the governor approved. This 15 is wrong.
That's right. Limited entry would be the next component. Subcommittee figure is the same as the governor's figure, with the exception of the transfer to the fisheries data center, which comes out of travel, contracts, and commodity. You see it there at the top of page 266A, personal services to their four positions transferred out. And looking on page 268 and 269, you see the new component, Fisheries Data Center. There's also an intent statement which covers what's been done here. This is taking transfers from the Division of Commercial Fish Admin and also from the limited entry budget and an addition of some 800. Habitat protection, land and water conservation. The house figure does not authorize the three new positions that were requested and approved by the governor, and the total reduction of those three positions plus their associated costs. Habitat protection, admin, and support, there were general reductions made totaling $7,300. Environmental monitoring, there were two full-time positions approved by the governor. Both of these positions were deleted by the subcommittee, a total of $88,200. Those positions and related costs backed out of the government. Special federal project, total amount was the same as the governor's figure. There was the same intent statement used last year, again this year. The that, where you can read at the bottom, page 278A.
Could we make a change in that and have the report come by February 1st, 1981 instead of February 1st, 2981?
Got a little running room. Fine.
All right.
This was just an attempt to be realistic.
Gas pipeline monitoring, Governor's Street. Page 285, North Slope Hall Road.
Wait a second, on gas pipeline, you gave him all the money.
If it comes from Northwest.
But you didn't approve the position.
That's incorrect. This should all be approved.
Okay. Should we add the line that no general funds are to be expended? The same one we had on the federal special project? Or are we safe on that anyway?
Mr. Chairman, you couldn't do this anyway because the funding shown is program, so they don't materialize. North Slope Hall Road on page 285, the House recommendation is to delete this component, and there is an intent statement at the top of page 284A. Public safety, fish and wildlife protection. The first component is enforcement. It's 289. If you look on page 289, matching the figures up the governor's column against the House column, you see that the only difference is the addition of $400,000 on the miscellaneous line item in the House figure. The intent statement on page 288A covers that additional $400,000. Except that where it says the sum of $400,000 has been added to the governor's request to fund four, that should read five.
Okay, the division count on page 289 should be 93.
Should be five, right? No, it should be. Yeah, right, 93. Section on page 292 and 93, same as the governor's figure, except that some additional money on the contractual and commodities line items has been added to reinstate aircraft surveillance reduction that's made in the governor's figure. Marine enforcement is the same as the governor's figure. That brings us down to the Department of Environmental Conservation. The first element that has a request this year is on page 334 of the short form. Subcommittee figures the same as the governor's except for a $4,600 addition in the travel line item. That was tough to swallow, huh? Okay, the advisory board.
Travel north?
Good Lord. Page 336 and 337. Programs deleted in the House Subcommittee recommendation. There's 12,100 requested by the governor. Okay, in administrative services, there's $800 reduction in travel and $2,000 reduced for library services. Otherwise, the governor's figure. Director's office on page 342, 343 is the governor's figure. Governor's figure for the permit section.
Is this the that anchor's office that that coordinated permits?
I think this activity really would take place in Anchorage Pier Bank.
You'll notice we have a comment to the agency's encouraged to explore the cost effectiveness of charging people for funding. The question was whether it costs more to process the check than it did. Go ahead.
Monitoring and lab support to government figure. Governor's figure for facility construction operation. Same for Southeast region and South Central. On Northern region, position number 4, environmental field officer 2 for Fairbanks was completed. Associated costs with the position are also.
Where's that funding come from?
Funding was from CZN. Funding for that position.
CZN for Fairbanks?
Never know.
Why you leave it.
It was federal money.
It was federal. I just wanted to put program teachers in the course.
So this is federal. Environmental management, which takes in director's office, water quality management, management technical assistance, and air and solid waste, all the government figures. 366, which is gas pipeline surveillance. The House figure appears different from the governor's figure. Less $276,000, but that is the agency's revised request. But here again, you have the same situation that you had in Fish and Game. If the program receipts don't materialize, and put them in the and debt service all debt.
I
period.
What's this total?
The proposal on unitization would be, their proposal is $136,785, but I'd recommend we delete the account. Probably take a vacancy assessment on the account. Everybody's got a copy.
What was the deletion, Mr. Chairman?
This is a proposal that was, the department had put forth for additions, taken into consideration some things they hadn't anticipated when they submitted their original budget. Was suggested to be brought up to the full committee rather than, and treated as an add-on to be considered by the full committee as opposed to being considered by the subcommittee. And one is a proposal to cover new positions for unitization negotiations. The state used the new net profits bidding system on a number of the Beaufort tracks, which essentially makes the state a partner with the companies in the development of any discoveries in the area. And therefore, it's important that the state take part in the negotiations to unitize any fields that are discovered. Because what the unitization agreement does is assign what percentage of production goes to each individual lease, and also what percentage of costs go to each individual lease. And that didn't make much difference to the state one way or the other under the old system. But under a net profit system, since it's calculated on an individual lease basis, there's a certain concern that perhaps the industry may try to shift costs to the net profit leases where they recover them directly, dollar for dollar, where the state takes its share. And there are a number of other factors that affect the profitability for the state in these negotiations. And DNR wants to prepare for those negotiations by gearing up ahead of time, being ready when there is a discovery, and rewrite the unitization agreement so somebody on the state end is familiar with the subject area before the negotiations actually begin.
Brian, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I agree with Joe that this is really important and could mean make a substantial difference in future revenues. I also agree that the accountant for the Department of Revenue is not essential in this budget right now. We have before this committee House Bill 904, which transfers the auditing function to revenue, and if they do need a new accountant, that could be taken care of in the fiscal note process. If that bill doesn't pass, they don't need the accountant. So I think we could reduce that from the 136 down to about 93.
Thank you. And we want to take a vacancy assessment on the new position. I don't know what the standard vacancy for DNR is, but.
Is this on the first page?
This would be on page 157.
Representative Smith, Chairman of the Subcommittee, do you have any remarks or comments or suggestions or objections? Or?
Well, I have some problems with it. I would just assume I'm going to make a decision.
Are you offering this as just an amendment?
Yeah, I'll offer this as an amendment.
Is there an objection from the committee?
I'll voice my non-objection.
Debate?
Yeah.
Questions called for those in favor of the proposed amendment, signify by raising right hand. Yeah, I didn't even count. Let's do it again. Those in favor, signify by raising hand. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Is this four, Mr. Chairman?
It's four.
Motion carried.
Second proposal is, I guess it's a March 18th memo that you have, and it deals with implementing the regulations dealing with land use permits. When an oil company wants to conduct seismic exploration on state lands, they have to get a permit from the state to do that. And departments promulgating regulations will require the companies to give the state a copy of whatever information they acquire for conducting this activity on state land. And the importance of it is that when the state conducts a lease sale and has to make an assessment of the land that it's leasing, it has to have that type of seismic information in order to do that. And what we've been doing in the past is going out after the fact and purchasing it. And there's a $2 million request in this year's capital budget, and makes 1.2 of it was put in House Bill 60 by the Senate. And that's essentially for purchase of seismic data and interpretation of that data for the upcoming Cook Inlet sale and a couple of the other sales that are coming up in the near future. And as I said, what these regulations will do, we'll say to the companies, we're going to let you explore on state land. The only condition is that you give us a copy of what you get. We'll pay for the tapes and pay for the reproduction of the information, but we want a copy of it. And that'll allow the state geologists to make a more accurate assessment of what the potential of various areas are. And they use that information to determine what acres to put out to lease, and also what particular bidding system to use on the acres that is put out to lease. The savings are fairly substantial because, as I indicated, well, what it costs is roughly $213,000 for the first year, plus I assume each year here on out in the inflated by whatever the inflation cost of tape and rails are in storage. But the savings, if we had had that for the next few sales coming up, would have been the $2 million we're spending in the capital budget, plus the millions and millions we're going to need to spend on seismic data for areas that are intended to be leased in the upcoming 5-year plan. This simply lets the state in ahead of time rather than going after the fact. And it's a direct savings, substantial savings.
The price tag was what, dude?
$213,000.